Then forthwith I shall say, when, toward the hour of noon, he felt his noble heart growing cold within him, the last emotion which warmed it was that Jefferson still survives. But what John Adams did not know as he breathed his last words on this date in 1826 was that Jefferson had preceded him to death. The 4th of July, the co-founding of this country, the date that two of its essential founders perished from this earth. Adams, of course, not only the second president, he was the first vice president. On the anniversary of his inauguration as such, I went down to Federal Hall in Lower Manhattan. There's a big statue of George Washington on the steps, lots of people waiting to have their photo taken with him. But I wanted to see what the crowd knew about John Adams. So I checked in with some folks, starting with Bridget Sudoff of Orlando, Florida. Who was that? Who was the first vice president?
I have not a clue.
Well, you want multiple choice?
Sure.
Okay. Madison, Monroe, Jefferson, or Adams?
Hold on.
You knew it was going to be one of those guys.
Well, yeah. I mean, I got a 33.333% chance of getting it right.
I think 25, actually. One out of four.
Was it Madison?
It was John Adams. I also spoke with John Donald Fitzpatrick. You know who it was. Come on.
No, I don't.
He was. I'll give you a hint. He was also the second president of the United States.
Still don't know that.
You want multiple choice?
No.
All right. Madison, Monroe, or John Adams?
John Adams.
That's correct. So John Adams doesn't make that big an impression on you?
No.
You know why? He's not on currency, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you know anything about John Adams?
No.
And we find that too many people do not know anything about John Adams, despite the recent HBO miniseries. So joining us is J.L. Bell, a writer and historical researcher. He writes a blog called Boston 1775. Hello, J.L.
Hello, good morning.
Why 1775 of all the years?
Well, that's when everything started, and here in Boston, we tend to think that the war was over by 1776 when the British left this area, and there was just sort of mopping up operations in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and the whole South.
So you guys haven't gotten past the 13 colonies and maybe a United States mindset?
That was always New England's problem at the time, yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, John Adams, we were talking about him being vice president. He was vice president for 9 days before Washington was president. So does that mean I could win a bar bet? Was Adams actually technically the first president of the United States?
I think he was pretty clear what his office was, which he felt was extraordinarily insignificant. Those 9 days, I remember looking at the Congress records, and they were spending a lot of time trying to deal with protocol and who would say what to whom and how you would address different people. They knew that the inauguration of the president was going to be very important, so they had to work up to that. And yet at the same time, they started the nation's business by figuring out how to swear each other in.
Now, Adams didn't, as you said, he didn't really have respect for the office. Here's a famous Adams quote. My country has in its infinite wisdom contrived for me the most insignificant office that ever the invention of man contrived or his imagination conceived. He didn't like being vice president, and he didn't really think much of the vice presidency, did he?
That's right. He said that in 1793 after he'd been vice president for several years and really gotten a sense of what the job entailed.
And so do you think this was – if he had a totally different perception, if he came into it very optimistic, do you think we'd think of the vice presidency as being worth more than a bucket of spit?
I think that the original constitutional convention thought that the Senate, the whole Congress, would be more important than it actually turned out to be. And so they probably thought of the vice presidency, which was the president of the Senate, the person who oversaw the most august legislative body in the land, as more important. And then as it turned out, the way the rules had been written, Adams could do nothing but vote in tiebreakers. And he voted in more tiebreakers than any other vice president because the Senate was so small. But that didn't turn out to be a very important job at all.
And I think at the time they even kind of self-defined it, or maybe it was their conception of the Constitution, that the vice president wasn't even part of the president's cabinet. So it was almost a purely legislative duty as they conceived the vice presidency.
That's right. And yet one thing that is pretty constant in American history, senators do not like to be told what to do. So as president of the Senate, Adams was not really allowed to advise the senators as he'd hoped.
Right. And he didn't, and from what I had been reading, he thought the Continental Congress was full of intellectuals and great rhetoric. And he just thought that the Senate was, well, he was, get into his personality a little, but he was a little bit of a sour guy. And he didn't think much of the quality of the speech making that was being conducted there in the Senate.
Oh, yes. Now, when he worked with the Continental Congress, it was the early days. It was really the A-team. And by the time he was in Paris and London as a diplomat, the Congress in Philadelphia was no longer really the best and the brightest of the colonies. So he didn't get to – he got to experience the Continental Congress at its best.
And I get the sense that the Congress kind of felt that he had disdain for him. I mean, he was very respected – as part of the revolution, but did he gradually lose respect as maybe he sniffed or looked his nose down at these senators who he didn't think was up to snuff?
Yes, and he was a cantankerous sort, and he was not a diplomat. Well, he was a diplomat, but he was not diplomatic.
Yeah, and he would let you know where he stood. Well, let's talk about this HBO miniseries. In fact, the Adams Renaissance, because David McCullough wrote a biography that won a Pulitzer Prize and was a bestseller, and from that, they made this HBO miniseries. Beforehand, did you sense that, especially being a Bostonian, that people were becoming more and more interested in Adams than they ever had before?
Oh, yes. McCullough's book certainly created a renaissance. For the very first time, people were talking about a monument to Adams, for instance.
As the... Now, as far as the HBO miniseries, I thought that having Madison and Jefferson hang out in the Bada Bing was historically inaccurate. But seriously, what did you think of the depiction of Adams by HBO?
I thought Paul Giamatti's performance was excellent. I thought that it was interesting to see a lot of Adams' own words put into the character's speaking mouth, sometimes to the he was literally at times reading off what came out of his letters or his speeches.
Yeah.
I thought that simply because it was biographical, it put Adams at the center of events where he wasn't necessarily the center of events. It made him a crucial figure when he was one of many crucial figures.
Gotcha. Well, let's listen to, we have a couple clips here. And so first, let's concentrate on Adams' words and Adams' rhetoric. And sometimes, you know, obviously they're not going to be reading letters. So you could tell us if you know if these words came from a speech he gave or letters he wrote to Abigail. But this is when he's rousing his fellow Massachusettsians. What do you say?
Massachusetts.
When he's
Bostonian.
When he's rousing those folks, he's about to go to the Continental Congress, and here's what he says.
Liberty is not built on the doctrine that a few nobles have a right to inherit the earth. No! No! It stands on this principle that the meanest and lowest of the people are, by the unalterable, indefeasible laws of God and nature, as well entitled to the benefit of the air to breathe, light to see, food to eat, and clothes to wear as the nobles or the king. That is liberty. And liberty will reign in America.
J.L. Bell, do you know where those words came from?
Interesting you should ask that, because I looked that up. Many of the words come from a pamphlet that John Adams wrote in 1765 against the Stamp Act. The final rousing peroration, the liberty will reign in America, which is quoted all over the internet now, I can't find that anywhere.
Interesting. So they took the written word, because they have to act it out. And whenever you do a dramatization of historical events, there's some cheating going on to make it more dramatic. But what did you notice or pick out where they did this a lot, where they perhaps dramatized or over-dramatized historical events?
I would say that the first episode with depictions of violence in Boston and the Boston Massacre trial seemed to be the most distorted. It presented a sort of two-dimensional picture of the politics there. The Samuel Adams character was quite unrecognizable.
So what happened was John Adams, and as far as historical accuracy, John Adams said, I will defend the English soldiers who fired on the crowd. He did. He won. But the series was showing that, except for his wife, everyone in Boston was against him.
That's right. And he did defend the soldiers. However, he had two co-counsels.
Mm-hmm.
He, in terms of winning, two of the soldiers were convicted of manslaughter, which was a capital crime at the time, but then got off with a corporal punishment of branding on the thumb. It was much more of a mixed picture, and a great deal of the drama came from the idea that John Adams was alone and the very hostile crowd and was suffering from in public opinion, and there is really no evidence that he suffered in public opinion at the time.
Mm-hmm. And also during that scene, I remember they were respectful, at least respectful towards there was an African American in the courtroom at the time, and I read something you wrote on the blog that wouldn't have been true at all, right?
There were African American witnesses, and. There were also, I have no idea about the courtroom to be certain, but almost it's almost complete that there would be no African-Americans in sort of public spaces like that as equal citizens.
And just referring to an African-American as Mr. So-and-so wouldn't have happened. And
Not that particular African-American. That witness was based on an enslaved man named Andrew that I guess that character was thought to be a composite because the director referred to him at one point in an interview on Talk of a Nation as a freed slave.
Mm-hmm. And I even read in your blog that at the newspapers at the time, famously Crispus Attucks he was a freed slave who was one of the people killed in the Boston Massacre, but newspapers referred to everyone else as Mr., but not Crispus
That's
Attucks.
Right. Every other adult male and Crispus Attucks.
Well, let's hear some more of Paul Giamatti's portrayal of John Adams in this scene, and maybe this goes to him being a central figure in history. I don't know how important he was. I'll ask you about this. Here he's nominating a certain someone, you know him from Statues in the Quarter, as leader of the armed forces.
What is required now is one able man to build and to lead this new continental army.
And who do you propose of the Massachusetts delegate should lead this force?
Gentlemen, we move too quickly. We have not yet resolved the question of any continental army, much less who is to lead it.
That's John Dickinson of Pennsylvania, who didn't want to go to war.
I have but one gentleman in mind, known to all of us. Mr. President, I propose, as Commander-in-Chief, our most honorable and esteemed delegate, the good gentleman from Virginia, Colonel George Washington.
J.L. Bell, do you think that's how it went down?
No. Which is to say, John Adams did nominate George Washington. It was a terrific political move to bring in some of the colonies to the South. It turned out to be a terrific personnel decision. Washington was very good as a commander. The miniseries depicts the Continental Army adopting the New England Army as its own, adopting this national cause after hearing the news of the Battle of Bunker Hill.
Mm-hmm.
However, in real life, the Continental Congress made that decision two or three days before the Battle of Bunker Hill, and thus over a week before they received news of the battle.
Ah. And I guess, though, if he was the one who thought of Washington, John Adams should be the patron saint of HR departments everywhere.
He was.
That was a good call.
Until he got to his own cabinet, he was quite good at choosing who should be in charge. He also promoted the career of Henry Knox.
My biggest problem with the series, which I thought was excellent, I enjoy Jefferson from the nickel, the $2 bill, and everywhere else. I thought the depiction of Jefferson as a little Weasley, well, it didn't comport with perhaps my misconceptions. What did you think of that?
I actually liked the picture of Jefferson. The fact that he was obviously very intelligent, but also very soft-spoken. Clearly, it was sort of an Adams-centered view of the world and an Adams-centered view of Jefferson. But Jefferson was not quite able to reconcile his fairly strong and somewhat ruthless political instincts with his ideals.
And that was J.L. Bell, writer and historical researcher at the blog Boston 1775, talking with me, a super excited me in April, about John Adams, the first vice president of the U.S. Adams died this day along with his friend, rival, and fellow patriot, Thomas Jefferson. It was 50 years ago or sorry, it was many, many more years than that, but it was 50 years after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It was in 1826. That is it for this hour of the BPP. We are always online at npr.org/Brian Park. I'm Mike Pesca. This is the Brian Park Project from NPR News.